Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And if you're out there across America, why, we may open up the lines a little later for calls, or we may not, depending on how the program goes. But it usually goes very well when we have Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster with us. Hi, Bob. How are you doing tonight?
Well, just terrific. Another wonderful day in my life, and no complaints.
Well, when you get to be our age, why, every day is a wonderful day, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I played a very good game of golf today. I had an 88, and that's pretty good for an old gentleman.
How'd you do on the second hole, though?
No, I'm just joking.
That was an old joke they used to say. I did 88, but the second hole I did even better. Anyway, of course, let's talk a little bit about, of course, what's going on in the world and what's going on financially. And of course, it's become apparent that many of the CEOs of our major corporations seem to be selling out their stock and cashing in their stock options almost as if they knew that things were going to begin turning down in the not-too-distant future. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, executive salaries are absolutely incredible. They're beyond the beyond. $400-$600 million a year. That's just madness. And, of course, at the same time, we're looking at people until this year had not been getting any raises at all, and this year they're up about 4%, or we're led to believe they are. And so the attitude of big business in particular is that let's get rich and heck with everybody else. They have also started to reduce dividends, and the main reason why is because about 60% of the money that's available for that sort of thing is going into the purchase of shares in the company.
In other words, the companies are buying back their own shares to boost the value of it.
That's right, and yes, it does boost the value in behalf of the shareholder, but it also boosts the value for those executives who have these outrageous stock options, which they backdate, which is fraud, and they get caught, and most of them, all they do is get fined, they might lose their job, and it's just incredible that none of these people are going to jail. And so, you know, the criminality of corporate America in the last 6 years hasn't gotten any better. It's just as bad as it was, and it looks like it might even be getting worse.
Well, I think that, of course, it's just, to me, the fact that so many of these executives are seem to be selling their stock at the present time makes me feel that they feel that we're going to be going into a downturn in the economy. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, corporate America, I think that things are going to soften up, so to speak.
All right, you hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman right here at Radio Liberty. All right, pick up the story there, Bob.
They seem to think that there might be a little slowdown, but they don't envision the kind of things you and I do. They believe the government figures, which anybody of sound and sane mind would see, are absolutely absurd.
You're talking about the unemployment, the rate of inflation, the things of that sort.
Right. And so I think, you know, through the veneer of it all, I think they know things are going south, and they don't want to have to say that they are, because that might expedite the process, and then they would be blamed for causing an avalanche of thought and action, which might bring about a recession. And so everybody lies. Part of our culture.
Well, I think it's very interesting that Warren Buffett apparently is still shorted on the dollar. Have you heard that? Certainly we know he lost a great deal of money last year.
I think he has part of his original short position, but I don't know for sure. They're very secretive about some of their things. You know, Warren Buffett is an insider.
He certainly is.
And he is part of the Illuminati. And you don't make that kind of money in markets unless you've got extraordinarily good information. And all of those people seem to have it, and the public ends up paying for it. And that's just the way it works. And so I don't take much credence in what the likes of Warren Buffett have to say. If it was someone who went through a university, worked very hard, went up through the ranks, and was extraordinarily successful, I would say, well, I'd just as soon listen to him or they or her rather than Warren Buffett.
Well, he certainly has done very well through the years. I'm sure that he is an insider. I'm sure he knows what's going to happen. But I think if you can see what he's doing, you get sort of an idea that, you know, of where the world is going, and so it was so interesting that he was buying businesses outside of the United States, although he certainly has invested very heavily in the insurance industry here in the United States as well.
Well, he's been making very diverse investments for many years. Some of the big ones recently are in Israel.
Right. I was very interested in that. Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a minute as we bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Bob Chapman. We were just talking about Warren Buffett's investments, and it's really been phenomenal. Of course, Bob feels that Warren Buffett is an insider. There is a small group that really runs the world, and I'm sure that he's absolutely right. Certainly it was Warren Buffett who took Arnold Schwarzenegger to Europe, introduced him to Lord Rothschild, so that before Arnold was appointed to run for the governor of the sixth largest nation in the world. Well, if California was a nation, why, we would be the sixth largest economy. And Arnold Schwarzenegger was chosen by the establishment to run for governor. So pick up the story there. Anyway, we've been talking a little bit about what's happening to the economy. And, of course, right now things are not doing too bad. The housing market is not falling as rapidly as it might, because the interest rates have actually fallen to phenomenally low levels, haven't they? For buying houses, isn't it fairly cheap to buy a house now as far as the interest rate's concerned?
Well, it's about 0.75 point cheaper than it was last May. The 10-year rate is finally, on the U.S. Treasury, is finally moving up. It closed at 4.74 today. And that puts it about 5 basis points above last week. It won't show up in today's figures, but it'll show up in next week's figures if the rate stays at that level. And I think it'll stay at that level and perhaps go higher. One of the reasons is that the Bank of England, unexpectedly, for most people, arrange for an increase in the lending rate from 5 to 5.25%, or 5.25 to 0.5%. I don't know which it was, but anyway, it was higher. The ECB in December did the same thing, European Central Bank. And the European Central Bank did not change rates today. But I expect in either February March that they will. And the reason why I'm pretty sure of this is that all the European nations are increasing their money in credit for about 9%. And that's rather high for them. And so I see rates in Europe going higher. I see them going higher again in England. And for two reasons, they're increasing the money in credit at 9.3%. And at the same time, they've had a tremendous influx of people from Eastern Europe. And obviously, many of them had a fair amount of money. And 50% of the homes that are being bought in Southwest England, which is the region in which London is, 50% of them have been buying. I'll say that again. They have been buying over 50% of the homes that are sold that cost over $400,000. So they have a unique situation, and how long that'll last for remains to be seen. But retail sales are soft to lower, and the consumer confidence index came out today for England, and the confidence in all the categories was lower, and it's the lowest it's been for some time. And so I think that inflation is going to persist.
And of course, that's why they're raising the interest rates, is because there's inflation there. They've got to get the interest rates up to dry up the availability of money for people to, you know, to be able to borrow. They've got to get the interest rates up high enough people won't be able to borrow. And this is what's really fueling so much of the economy and the inflation.
Well, that's correct. And their inflation in England is running around 2.75%. And on the continent, it's running around 2.5. So,
no, is that a real inflation? Is that honest inflation rate of 2.5%?
Well, I don't know how much they lie, but you know those are official figures.
Yeah, but of course, one of our figures here, 2.5% or so, and you have often said it's running 8 or 9%.
Well, I agree with that. The American government lies more than other governments do. I think the British do lie about their figures. Country by country, I can't say. I haven't made a study of it. But the important thing is that they're going to have to raise rates at least one more time. Now, what does that do to affect us? It does lots. The U.S. government has to be able to sell their treasury paper and their Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac securitizations, which are package mortgages, and other aspects of federal spending have to be funded. And $2.5 billion a day of that is being funded presently by foreigners, mostly central banks. And if interest rates in Europe continue to rise, I don't see how the United States, we'll see the Federal Reserve can lower rates here.
In other words, what you're basically saying is if we want people to borrow, to buy our paper, we're going to have to pay a higher interest rate to attract them. That's why the interest rates have to go up here, to attract the investment from foreign. Is that right?
That's correct. And if Europe has gone up 0.5%, which they have, that means we've got to go up 0.5% or more. So I think that's going to be the catalyst as to why the stock market's going to go down. I think that when they realize in March or April or May that there's not going to be any drop in interest rates, then you'll see the stock market come down. Then you'll see yields go up as bonds go down. And you'll also see higher gold and silver prices. And the amount of money and credit that's being created by the Fed, which this past year has been about 10.8% on the year, and since 1959 the average has been 7.9%, so that's very high over average. When it will reach hyperinflationary levels remains to be seen. It could happen later this year, but they're going to continue to increase money and credit. They cannot do anything else but and they're trapped on the interest rates because they have to have money to service their debt, and so they're in a box and they can't get out. And the upshot of it will be a recession in America and perhaps a depression.
All right. Well, so one of the interesting things is that, you know, certainly as I'm reading a lot of the financial advisors, they're telling me that the price of oil is going to go down this year, and that there's plenty of oil, that the price is going to fall, and the expectations that the price of oil and therefore gasoline, diesel, all the things that are attributed to oil will fall as well. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, the consumption of oil is still higher than it was a year ago, about 2.5%. Second of all, you have disruptions from time to time, like the recent settlement that was made between Belarus and Russia. And the bottom line there is Belarus wanted a transit fee for the oil, and the Russians said, no, that's not in the deal. And they're getting their oil at the old Soviet prices, as long as they, you know, remained a friend of Russia. And when Russia said no, they started stealing the oil. Those things happen. And Ukraine did the same thing with gas just about this time last year, natural gas. And we have an ongoing shoot-em-up in Nigeria, and a good part of production is being thwarted. You have the Venezuelan government has switched from dollars to euros, like Iran was forced to do, actually, recently. And then you have the possibility of war. Now, with all of those things put together, you say to yourself, my goodness gracious, how could oil come down in value? Yet it just came from $64 to $51 a barrel. And why is that? With all of those terrible things that are kind of anti-oil going on. And the reason why is the oil market is being manipulated.
And I think you're absolutely right, and I share your concern. I believe that the troop increase in Iraq and bringing in, of course, the 81st Airborne into Kuwait, and that, of course, the Boxer Strike Force in the Persian Gulf, the John Stennis carrier force moving into the Persian Gulf along with the Eisenhower carrier force. I mean, I think this is a prelude to war. And I think if it comes, because the Iranians could very well shut off a great deal of the oil supply that's coming not only from Iran, but coming from Saudi Arabia and the Arab countries. And I think this could have disastrous results. I don't think the average American has any idea what's going on in the world. I think he's living in a dream world.
Well, let's take it one step further. I think the real reason that oil went down was twofold. Number one, to justify a higher dollar, ostensibly, because oil is going to be down and there won't be as much inflation. And if that was the case, why is the gold suppression cartel continuing every day to make the price of gold go down when it's trying to go up? So the gold believers don't believe that. People who see problems are acting on it. But even more important, what they're doing here is in knocking gold oil down almost $15 a barrel, they're setting a lower platform, because if there is war with Iran, I would expect that a good portion of all American ships would be sunk.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob's. You picked the story up there. You were just saying that you anticipate that there's a war. It could have disastrous effects upon our naval ships that are there in the Persian Gulf.
Yeah, and then, of course, the Gulf will be closed, and oil will go to $100, $200 a barrel. So that's one of the reasons they're putting it down, making it go down. And if also Israel were to use the atomic weapons which we recently gave them, called Bunker Busters, which have about 1/15 the yield of a Hiroshima or Nagasaki atom bomb, if they use those, I think that they could open up the whole world to nuclear warfare. Because does everybody really think that China and Russia are going to stand still? And if they were to join Iran, we may have a number of cities in the United States and elsewhere attacked and perhaps even wiped out. And then we have the benefits of our foreign policy, in which we have left our border in the south open for the 5 years since the 9/11 and then the advent of the unilateral attack for no reason, supposedly, on Iraq. And if anybody was ever going to go into America, it was pretty easy to get in. And what kind of devices do these people that our government tells us they're trying to keep out but are here? What do they have? Do they have suitcase nuclear weapons, or do they just have conventional explosives? I mean, the possibilities are endless, and we could end up in a nuclear war where half of the people in the world would die. And so this is the total extrapolation of that. And of course the dollar is falsely being held up and made strong to keep France and Russia happy, and also in anticipation of this war that they're going to have with Iran. And I'd like to add one more thing, and that is the Iraq Study Group was put together by the top people in the Illuminati. That group happens to be first, second, and third tier that are in that group in the Illuminati hierarchy. And George Bush is involved in the Illuminati, as we all know. And they have told him what to do, and it does not include invading Iran. And so I believe, and I don't put this beyond them one bit, I believe that George Bush is an excellent candidate for assassination by those people.
Well, I certainly hope you're wrong, but it'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out. I think we're dealing with some very, very vicious people working within the shadows, of course, directing the course of world events. Isn't it interesting that we find Lee Hamilton there, longtime CFR member, longtime Trilateral Commission member, as the vice chairman of the 9-1-1 Commission, and then on the Iraq Study Group. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just commenting in response to something that Bob had said, that we find that a man named Lee Hamilton, he was the vice chairman of the Iraq 9-1-1 Commission. Now, then, of course, we have the Iraq Study Group, and who do we have on the Iraq Study Group? Why, we have the same Lee Hamilton, longtime member of the Council on Foreign Relations, longtime, although not a present member, of the Trilateral Commission, obviously one of the movers and shakers of this whole world. And, of course, they don't have that many people. They have to keep using the same people over and over again. And Lee Hamilton is one of those people who moves from committee to organization to committee, into government, out of government, into key positions. He is one of those people who is, I believe, helping to rule the world today. But behind the scenes, go ahead. And he seems like such a nice man when you hear him interviewed on television. Go right ahead.
Well, I think that you pointed out how this coterie of people, both active and ex-politicians and bureaucrats, continue year after year after year for a long, long time, 30, 40, 50 years, keep on popping up in important, quote, bipartisan situations. There's very little in Washington's bipartisan. they're all owned, except for a handful, by the people who control government from behind the scenes. And they all get pay up, or if they're not paid off, usually via campaign contributions and other goodies such as the jobs for their families and friends and so on. Either that or they're compromised by something that they've been doing sexually that they would not want people to know. And so we've got a giant cesspool of corruption in Washington. And it's not only in Washington. A good part of corporate America is that way. I mean, just look at it. I mean, we just, the very latest is 200 companies and 800 offices and board members who were defrauding their companies by backdating options. I mean, it just doesn't end. There is no morality left.
Well, then what would you expect in a country where they're taking God and prayer and the nativity and recognition of Jesus Christ out of our schools by edict of a Supreme Court that opens its sessions every day when the choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court, but that same court has declared that we couldn't let a child mention God in school. They've destroyed the morality of our country. They've done it intentionally, Bob, as you know.
Well, it goes throughout our society. There's so many things that they're doing that they shouldn't be done. There's just thousands of them. I just talked to somebody today that said children in the sixth grade don't know how to write. They only know how to print. I mean, I find that incredible. I mean, is this deliberate or when do they teach him how to do cursive?
Look, there are a lot of high school graduates who have no idea who's buried in Grant's tomb. Go right ahead.
Well, they probably think it's Britney Spears or something.
Anyway, we do have a problem, and it's unfortunate they've corrupted the minds of our youth, and actually they've intentionally dumbed them down by poisoning them with fluoride and NutraSweet and mercury and all of these deadly things that they know affect the mind, but they really don't want a smart population. They want a subservient population for the New World Order and the New World Religion.
Well, I certainly agree with that. I think, you know, it's really a breakdown in morality, and the average person isn't able to handle moral breakdown. And there are some people who can, maybe 5% of the population. But by and large, the average person just can't. And, you know, their excuse is, well, I'm so busy. We are so busy, husband and wife, trying to make ends meet because they want a bigger house or something else or a boat, whatever the case is. And they're not watching out for the kids. They don't know what's going on in school. They could care less as long as they get through it all and get out of their hair. And then when they go to college, which most parents help their children to some extent with, they don't even know what they're doing there. And now I'm told that they have these giant sex orgies with everybody running around naked and doing things to one another during an evening.
Sounds like the Bohemian Grove. We'll be right back here, Bob.
Comprehensible.
Well, this is Dr. Stan Back. Our guest is Bob Chapman, and we're really talking about what's happening to the economy. Bob's been talking about the moral breakdown of our society, and of course, there's no instance in all history where a nation has become immoral and pagan and turned against God, where God has not eventually turned against that nation and brought his judgment upon them. So anyway, Bob, pick up the story from there.
Well, I think I'd rather cover the morality issue, and what it is to me is part and parcel of that whole breakdown.
Yeah.
And because the average person wasn't cut out to be a thief, a criminal, a liar, someone who involves in illicit sex and things like that. The average person can't handle that.
Well, you know, you go back, there's a wonderful book we carry, and I'm sure you're well aware of it. It's called Fiat Money Inflation in France, and it's a discussion of what happened in France after the French Revolution when they turned to a fiat money system and of course, tried to destroy God and create a perfect utopian secular society. And as you read that book, written 125 years ago about what happened something over 200 years ago, it's like deja vu all over again. The same moral breakdown is coming about in America, at least in part related to the fact that we have a totally fraudulent economic system where people can gain great wealth without any effort on their own, simply on learning how to work the system, as it was. This fiat money system that's created artificial prosperity based upon absolutely nothing. Have you considered that, the similarities between that era and what's happening in America today?
Yes, I do, and it's happened periodically through time. I don't get too much into it in the International Forecaster, and the reason why is that very few people have a good grasp of history. I will cite certain things and leave it at that, and they have to take my word for it. Because if I go into it, It becomes historical, and they're not interested, the public, even some of my readers, I'm sure. And they don't want to hear that our banking system was, as we know it today, was usurped in 1307 when the Crusaders who had started the system were knocked off by the Illuminati.
You're talking about now the Templars, the Knights Templar, when Jacques Cousteau was arrested on October the 13th, the Friday the 13th, I should say, 1307.
That's true. Yeah, that's correct. But it's very interesting.
Hold on, thought we'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob was simply talking about the historical perspective of so much that goes on today, and you can't understand modern-day banking unless you understand the part that the Knights Templar played, and, of course, how they were the international bankers during the 13th century, and then in 1307, why, of course, Jacques de Molay was arrested, and, of course, it was on Friday the 13th, as I remember, of October, 1307, when Jacques de Molay was arrested, and then the central bankers took over from the international bankers. Go ahead, pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, it didn't take them but 41 years to destroy the system, because the Lombard system collapsed in 1348. And so, why is that important? Well, it's important for a lot of reasons, because all the people who were involved in the Venetian banking system, as it was called at that time, were thrown out of Italy. And there was only two places that would take them, and that was Holland and Wales. And I'll save that story for another day. But getting back to what I just cited, the important thing is, as soon as that system changed, there was a tremendous moral breakdown, and there was a failure of the system. And we have the same kind of system today. The only thing is today, and we have the same problems with that system, the only thing is that we don't have, like they had in 1348, the bubonic plague, which wiped out half of the people in Europe. But that doesn't mean we couldn't have one. And so then you got to ask yourself, is this an act of God? It's a good question.
Well, I think it's so interesting that people don't understand so much of the beautiful architecture and things that Venice date back to that era. And then, of course, they picked up these ideas of banking in Florence, and so much of the magnificent architecture and statuary of Florence is related to their banking system. And then, of course, the central banking centered in Great Britain in about 1694, I think, something like that. when they established the Central Bank of Europe, pardon me, of England. And the central banking is really the major driving force behind so much of what's going on in the world today. Would you agree with that?
It is control. And, you know, I find it interesting that the socialist, President Chavez of Venezuela, who's just elected again by 62% of the vote, he said he's going to, via payment, is going to nationalize some of the industries that are owned by foreigners. But one of the interesting things that he said, that is the central banking system in Venezuela, is an abomination. We have to do something about it. And I think he's going to throw them all out. And I think it's wonderful. And he was the same man who stopped FTAA, called in its tracks. And I've received a fair amount of flack from other conservative writers that he's a Marxist and he's this and he's that. You know something? I really don't care. Your enemy's enemy is your friend. And if Chavez is capable of giving the conspiracy a pain, a fretful and terrible pain, well, I'm all for it. And if the people of Venezuela want to have that kind of government, I think that's their business, not ours.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this situation lines up in South America. Of course, I have an uneasy feeling that Chavez is playing a part there. He is mobilizing all of the countries of South America into a free trade zone where the countries give up their national sovereignty for free trade in exchange for the prosperity that comes with free trade. And that's exactly what the leaders of our government, our secret government, want. So is he really what he purports to be? He's a good friend of Fidel Castro, and Fidel Castro has always been very close to the Rockefeller interests and the Council on Foreign Relations. In fact, if you read David Rockefeller's memoirs, he will tell you that his daughter, in fact, both of his daughters were very good friends of Fidel Castro. Why would the daughters of David Rockefeller be very good friends of the wicked Fidel Castro, and except unless maybe nothing as it appears to be? And if you question that, we do carry the book here, Memoirs by David Rockefeller. Why are his daughters such good friends of the wicked Fidel Castro, and wicked Fidel Castro is such a good friend of Hugo Chavez? Nothing, I believe, is really as it appears to be. But pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're right. But in the short period of time, in the short haul, that's fine. Those people are going to do what they're going to do, which are the Rockefellers and that ilk. And we don't have anything that we can stop them with. We don't control the media. And that's why we're doing what we're doing on shortwave, and I publish a publication. And there's a reason for that, because of the control of media, people are not getting anything that even resembles the truth. And so we have to keep on examining things. And when things happen that are inimical to the directions and forces, even on a temporary basis, of the people who want to control the world and have world government, well, I think that's fine. And I don't doubt for a minute, and I know that it's true, what you just said about Castro and the Rockefellers, and there's no reason Castro should have survived economically and financially for this long. And they wanted him there as a symbol, and they probably financed him.
I think you're absolutely right. In fact, anybody with half an ounce of intelligence, I would just ask, why was it that Bill Clinton and John Reno spent a 125-man, heavily armed SWAT team to Miami, Florida, to kidnap a little boy named Elian Gonzalez from a family that didn't even have any guns, so that they could send him back to Fidel Castro? Why would they do that and build up Fidel Castro's prestige throughout the world if he's really the enemy, and The answer should be very self-evident, and nobody ever talks about it. It's all phony as a $3 bill. But go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, you're right. It is. And but we talk about this in the context of social life throughout the world, and we talk about it in the context of politics and economics and finance. And so you have to look at this, or these problems, and they are problems, and they're always problems, because nothing ever goes smooth. So you have to look at them from outside looking in the context that there always can be something wrong, so you got to look for it. You have to be extremely skeptical, and you have to do a lot of homework to understand why, you know, they do things like they do. And the average person in the world who's educated, has no time for that. They don't want to know. They just hope that they don't get blown up, or they don't have to send their children off to war, and they hope they can have a decent lifestyle. And so they don't think about that. And the more prosperity that there is, the less they think about it.
Well, I think that it's important that at least our listeners have some idea of what's going on. Realize that we certainly are going to expand the war in the Middle East. It's going to have a disastrous effect on our economy. And I think people should begin trying to position themselves so they're not going to be badly damaged or destroyed during the time that lies ahead. Assuming, of course, we were to survive. Well, Bob, certainly they've been driving down the price of gold and silver very effectively. Would you like to comment on that? Certainly, you know, silver is way down. Certainly gold is way down. My understanding, however, is that in India and some of these other places, because the price is down, people are beginning to buy this just for their own use. They think this is a pretty good idea and a wonderful buying opportunity. What do you think?
I think so. I think in the last week that gold has been in the process of basing out, or at least trying to do so, and I think it is. The physical market is on fire, and I noticed that the top professionals and the commercials, as they're called, have started to, they liquidated about 60% of their short positions. Short position is when you bet something's going down. And then recently, just in the last week, they've started to increase them again because they were not part of driving the price of gold and silver down. And I think they're trying to impede the upward progress as much as possible of those two precious metals, because I think they're going to short them on the way up and make the process slower. They know gold and silver are going higher. They know they're going to go considerably higher. But they have to keep them down as much as they can. And, of course, they're doing all kinds of things to do that. And one of them is driving down oil prices and driving up the value of the dollar and all kinds of negative things whenever they can are used on the media. If you watch CNBC, you'd think the gold really didn't exist. And as I said before in other programs, if in 1980 you were 25 years old, you might conceivably have known about gold and silver going up. I would say at that time, people who were 20 to 25 years old, maybe 1% or maybe 0.1% knew what was going on. Those people now are over 50 years old, and they don't really understand, nor do they know, what happened to gold and silver in 1977. And so they have to be educated, and that's a process that our media and the people who suppress gold and silver prices do not want the public to know, because what will happen is that they'll find out and they'll start buying them, and they don't want them to do that. And so that's what I believe in some respects is have been an impediment to higher gold and silver prices, along with, of course, the actions of the Federal Reserve and other central banks.
What you're in essence saying is that they're manipulating the gold and silver prices because they know if they start to go up, people will want to get into them. It's a natural phenomenon. They want to first get, they want to make money. The market is really governed by fear and greed, and greed is the primary thing that drives people in, and fear is the thing that takes them out. And they say they know how to manipulate our greed, and they know how to manipulate our fear. But the one thing they don't want is for people to realize that we have a fraudulent monetary system. And, of course, you know, if this thing ever starts to implode, and, of course, it cannot keep going indefinitely as it is, history tells us over and over again, there's no instance in history when these fraudulent systems have worked, whether under the Knights Templar, whether under the Venetian banking system, under the Florentine banking system, certainly under the central banks that have existed in nation after nation. In fact, we even had a paper fraudulent fiat system. We didn't have paper money, but we had a fiat money system in ancient Greece, and Aristotle said there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money as long as we have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. He said that about 300 B.C. There's nothing wrong with, absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money as long as we have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. And as we look at Washington, D.C. today, who honestly believe that we have godlike knowledge there in the White House?
Well, we certainly don't.
And so the system is...
I noticed that SMU, they want to build the George W. Bush Presidential Library, and the professors and the students, many, are appalled at it. And I covered that in the coming... very briefly, though. Covered that in the next issue. And my question is, where would they like it to be situated? At the State Hospital for the Criminally Insane?
Well, I think that, you know, you really don't need a library to put both of his books in there. Anyway, I really do not. I think that we have a very embarrassing situation at the present time where we have leadership, of course, that really has no grasp either of the Constitution or of anything else, is simply carrying out the dictates of the power elite, who seem to be intent upon the very destruction of this great, once great land. In the meantime, they'll use the military and political power and financial power of our country to bring about the world government, but I fear in the end they're going to be quite willing to sacrifice this nation. Well, anyway, what should people be doing at the present time with their investments, Bob? You've said in the past they ought to be in gold and silver. Should they be in gold and silver stocks as well, or uranium stocks, something like that?
Well, as we've talked about on the program for many years, get out of debt, get rid of your credit card debt, your revolving debt, perhaps even the debt on your vehicles, and then the next step is gold and silver coins, and then gold and silver shares. And for all of you who have piles of money, you can buy Swiss bank franc bonds as well. And I see no other alternatives. I think the stock market sooner or later here is going to break. And the gains that you may have made here in the last year, because the previous 3 years the market did nothing, I think are illusionary. And I think that we're going to have the same thing happen soon that we had happen in March and April of the year 2000 when we get everybody out of the market. I think the risk is too great, and we know corporate earnings are going to be lower this year, and we just don't know by how much. My guess is they'll drop from like 18 to 5%.
And so you're suggesting that people get out of the stock market at the present time?
Absolutely.
All right, fine. So, Bob is suggesting you get out of the market, that you position yourself for some very, very difficult times. And now, certainly I'm not acting as a financial advisor. I don't think Bob is, but I think that he's been around for an awful long time, over 50 years. And I think you should realize there's no incident in all history where a nation has gone into a fiat money system, where that fiat money system has survived. And I think ours is beginning to quake and quiver right at the present time. Well, Bob, I want you to tell our listeners how to get the International Forecaster.
Well, if they'd like to get a free introductory copy, they can call 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. If you would like to visit our site on the Internet, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, forecaster.com. We publish an email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and we also have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. And we talk about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And you should take advantage of getting a free copy. There's no strings attached. And you're going to find out there's a different world out there than what you know of.
And well, I certainly look forward to Bob's articles coming. His letter comes twice a week, and it's always got fascinating things in it, and I try to read it through from beginning to end. You need to have a grasp of what's going on, not only in the world, but in the financial world and the political world, and he does an excellent job of being able to record so much information you won't get elsewhere. But here you're going to find out what's happened to M3. The government stopped printing the M3 figures, which is the figure of their increase of the monetary base, and I'm speaking now of credit and as well as money in circulation. They stopped printing it a year ago because they don't want the American people to know the disastrous course that we've taken. And we really are in a disastrous course, aren't we, Bob?
I think we are. I think they're trapped, and it's been coming since the early 1960s. Especially since we left the Bretton Woods Agreement and no longer backed our currency with gold and embarked upon a floating free current, fiat currency. And it was bound to end, and I think we're facing that, and they're doing everything that they conceivably can to keep it afloat, because that's their vehicle for the time being, and I think they're going to be unsuccessful. I think it's going to be a terrible mess.
And I fear, of course, that we could well be facing World War III, and with that, the total destruction of our currency, and it would start in all over again. But what it would mean for the average individual who has everything invested in dollars and fixed assets is the impoverishment of a large segment of our society. So I would suggest that people begin preparing right now to defend themselves in the times that lie ahead. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening has been Bob Chapman. Bob, one more time, the telephone number if people would like to get a copy of your newsletter.
Yes, the number is 800-375-4188, 800-375-4188, and you'll be very impressed, and you'll be happy you got a copy.
God bless. Thanks so much, Bob. We'll look forward to talking to you later in the month.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Bob Chapman. Hope you enjoyed it out there. And, of course, if you'd like to perhaps get an overview of the things we've been talking about, let me suggest my talk on the financial tsunami. It's available either in DVD or in video, and there's a syllabus that goes with it that gives you all the information that you need to understand what's really going on. For a history of money, let me suggest our pamphlet, The History of Money. It's inexpensive. It's simply a compilation of 5 newsletters and takes you into what happened in ancient Greece and ancient Rome and of course, the impact of the Templars in the past, And you have to understand that they tried it in Florence, they tried it in Venice, but everything changed in 1694 when they established the Bank of England, which has dominated the American central banks ever since that time. And that is why Andrew Jackson went out to close the bank, the central bank, down. So if you'd like to get the talk on financial tsunami, the syllabus, and, of course, our little pamphlet on the history of money, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And there's a news I just got this evening before we went on the air, and that is that Congressman Ron Paul is putting together a committee to explore the possibility of running for the presidency. And let me tell you, that's the most exciting news that I have heard in a long period of time. And I do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to helping Congressman Ron Paul, as he would give us an opportunity to really have a choice. And if they do not kill him, and believe me, they will, I believe, try, as they certainly shot and paralyzed George Wallace when he wanted to run against the establishment candidate some years ago. But Congressman Paul is a very brilliant and a very dedicated American patriot. And the fact he would even consider putting together an exploratory committee, he deserves our support, and I hope many of you will write to him and email him and call him and call his office and just say we're behind you. But it's going to take more than that. You're going to have to get dedicated to perhaps contributing to his effort. You're going to have to get dedicated to telling others about what's going on. And there's no better way to understand the spiritual forces that are at work intent upon destroying this country than to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, if you like to see it in visual form, their videos, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. That's They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version available in DVD, and some of them are available in VHS. The video, or I should say the DVD, and I think it's available in video as well, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and you could find out that the forces which are intent upon destroying this country were here at the time of the inception of this country. And then, of course, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, excellent overviews of what's happening from a religious and spiritual point of view, because this is truly a spiritual battle we're involved in, and the people who want to destroy America are motivated because they worship the other God. And what most people don't understand is there are other gods out there. Not the true God at all, but there are other gods. And let me suggest an excellent DVD we have put together by our good friend Joe Schimmel, The Da Vinci Con. It goes into, you'll actually see many, many, of course, shots, videos of the movies that you've seen, but you didn't understand the hidden message in them. I actually learned a lot from this, The Da Vinci Con. All of these are available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Remember to tell others about Congressman Paul. Let him know you're solidly behind him and dedicate to joining us in trying to save America. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course, if you're out there listening to us from across America, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But certainly our guest this evening is Bernadine Smith. And Bernadine has been at this battle for as long as I can remember. And she's very, very concerned about the organized effort to disarm the American people in preparation for a dictatorship. And people say, oh, we could never have a dictatorship in America. We have a constitution. Ladies and gentlemen, we have people in Washington, D.C. who do not believe in the Constitution, who hate the Constitution because it restricts the power of government, and have even written, as you'll find in the April 1974 edition of Foreign Affairs magazine, the magazine that's published by those who would be our dictators, the Council on Foreign Relations. There's an article there written by Richard Gardner that talks about the necessity of doing an end run around the Constitution by using international treaties, you know, so that they can circumvent the Constitution that these people have sworn to uphold, and they, of course, don't believe in it. They don't believe in the Second Amendment. They want all power unto themselves because, unfortunately, these people have a different world vision. They march to a different drumbeat. They worship. They dream a different dream. Well, Bernadine, thank you so very much. Are you feeling any better?
Yes, probably 79% on the way to being well, but I've had a pretty bad case of the flu.
All right, well, I'm so glad you're feeling better. Well, anyway, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, I don't hear your program all the time. I don't have a lot of time to even to listen to Alex Jones or some of the programs that come on the Internet. Because, you know, I'm working on my business plus what I do politically on my, you know, own research. So I don't really know just how much the accent has been on how close we are to a full takeover. We're being taken over, there's no question. We've been betrayed. We've been defrauded. We're being conquered by foreign powers that have taken positions in the highest offices in our land.
And, of course, what happens is while our boys are fighting overseas, supposedly for freedom, we're losing our freedom here in America. Our leaders are encouraging illegal immigration because they want to change the demographics of our country and convert us into a multilingual, multicultural society. And, of course, that they do not believe in English as the language of this nation. They want to be able to play one group against the other. They're bringing people with divergent cultures from all over the world. Why? Because they don't understand America. Now, people can come from other countries and understand America and the value of freedom. But they have to learn, they have to understand that freedom is when you limit the power of government over the lives of the people and you have moral people who can govern themselves. There's this idea of self-government that was the very essence of the foundation of this nation, that and a limited central government. The enemies of freedom want all power in Washington, D.C., and in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's been dead probably for at least a year, step by step they're taking away our freedom. Oh, we're here to guard you from the wicked Osama bin Laden, and that's why we've got to listen to all of your telephone conversations. Monitor all of your records. Watch everything that you do. Well, Bernadine, you pick up the story there.
Well, my view of it is that you have to come out very frankly and tell the people exactly what, you know, the real source of our problem. And the real cause, the real source, the real matrix of all the evil that has befallen us is right there in the Oval Office of the President. We have had, since we signed into the UN Charter, which was not advisable, but it was done by Truman, as you know. And since that time, every person who has sat in the chair of the President in the Oval Office has been an administrator of global government. Now, I've watched this develop, and one time I took all the bad laws and laid them out under titles headed by the names of each president. And you find a record of cooperation between whether they're Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. They do the same program. Each president takes over what the one before him put into motion, continues it, they fund it, the Congress knows what's going on, the Congress approves the funding, and each president adds a little bit more ever since we went under the UN Charter. When we got to George Bush's administration, I'm talking about Daddy Bush, he openly told us that we are under a new world order. And, of course, everybody knows the statement that he made where we were going to do all these things that were required by the United Nations, and he was very proud of the New World Order. Well, I think it's time, Dr. Stan, that we come out and tell the people that the New World Order should be looked at, and it is a mental disease. Because the people that are building it, and you can see what it's like. We can go into that in a bit. And you can see that it's the opposite of happiness. It's the opposite of reality. It's unlimited power.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Bernard Inman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bernard Inman was simply saying that people have to understand that what we're seeing in Washington, D.C. today, it is a desire for unlimited power. She describes it as a mental illness. Well, call it what you will, there are people who have always lusted after power. But the beauty and the magnificence of our system of government was the power of the federal government was to be limited by the chains of the Constitution. And as Thomas Jefferson had said so brilliantly, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And, of course, he was really echoing what John Locke had said 100 years earlier, that government governs best, it governs the least. But you see, the fascist element in Washington, D.C., wants not to be limited. They want to control everything. And they want to be able to destroy anyone who gets in their way. And they do destroy them by intimidation or by one means or another. These are ruthless and wicked people who are energized, I believe, by organized evil. And they today are intent upon transforming America from a system of government where the power of government was to be limited over the lives of the people and men could be free, to a system where government controls every aspect of human endeavor and monitors every individual, and all men are slaves. Other than the ruling elite, of course. And, of course, they believe in a new aristocracy, a ruling aristocracy, because they're so much smarter than we are. So you pick up the story there, Bernadette.
Well, you might ask the question, since everybody's focusing on the speech that was given by Bush yesterday and a lot of comments on today's TV. Condoleezza Rice was interrogated by the senators today. And,
well, you know, that's all showbiz, as you well know. They're not asking the really important questions.
Of course. Well, it is. It is. There's no difference in the two parties. Both parties are dedicated to putting in a new world order. It doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. A lot of stuff is done for show. They oppose the president. But if those same people were in power, they would be doing the same thing, and Bush's group would be around criticizing them just like the Republicans are doing today. It's show. It's to make the people think that they have a chance, that they have defenders.
That's all they call it, smoke and mirrors, or rhetoric over reality.
Right.
It's showbiz, as it were.
That's right. And they all know what they're doing, because you can tell it by the vote. You can tell that when it comes to voting, the appropriations that go along for the program for complete disarmament of the nation, for taking away the guns that are privately owned by the people, the Congress votes all of those bills and approves them. And it says that's what it's for. It's a disarmament program. And certainly they can read some of the like 3.5 pages that was done in one of the amendments to it, which repeated the whole definition of what disarmament meant: elimination of your armed forces, turning them over to international control under, presumably, although it didn't say it in the bill, United Nations, but that's what it was, the international organization. So while we are spending a lot of time, Dr. Stan, defending, and it's proper that we do, defending the principles of our government and making people aware of the value and what it does, why we have a constitution to protect our natural rights that come from the Creator, to put limits on the power that our fellow man can exercise over us. All those things are essential, that people know that. However, if we spend our time sitting on our laurels and singing the praises of all the principles that we have in the Constitution, we are wasting time, because we should be focusing on the development of the international government that's being laid upon us. And that's what we have now. We have the North American Union, where they're going to merge Mexico, Canada, United States into one system.
And I think it's really so interesting that I think that the other side, the people who, the traitors to our country, are really worried. In fact, this last week, Michael Medved, who poses as a conservative, has been lashing out and yelling and screaming on his program about these crazy people who think there's a desire to unite North America into a North American Union, and viciously attacking anybody who says that. And fortunately, Dr. Jerome Corsi and the Human Events newspaper, and which is not my favorite, but at least on this issue they're doing a good job, certainly WorldNet Daily, Joseph Farum, have been giving Jerome Corsi a voice. And of course, we have Jerome on frequently on our program. In fact, he'll be on a week from tomorrow evening talking about this move towards the North American Union. More and more people are beginning to understand what this means, how this is going to impact on them. I think the other side is really getting concerned. Now, I would point out, if you have any doubts that this is the plan, we have a speech by Nelson, by David Rockefeller, the most powerful man in America, who leads this whole movement towards internationalism and the destruction of America. We have a speech he gave 5 years ago called American Union 2005. Anybody wants it, is available through Radio Liberty. Now, of course, 2005 came and went. Now it's American Union by 2010. But it doesn't matter what the date is. The idea is the same, and that is the destruction of the national sovereignty of America. And combining our government with Mexico and Canada, and giving us the same freedom and prosperity that exists in southern Mexico. There's no way, Chris, you can join with these other countries and give up our sovereignty and maintain our freedom. This is what's happening in Europe. It's happening with the ASEAN nations. It's happening in Africa. It's happening with the Arabic nations. It's happening in South America. It is part of a planned program. And the average individual, unless they listen to programs like this, has no idea. And there a lot of people who honestly believe that Michael Medved is an honest American. And he is not. When he says that there's no move towards a North American Union, he's either terribly uninformed, or he's intentionally trying to deceive his listeners, or perhaps both. Anyway, go ahead there, Bernadette.
Well, the whole format of a new world order is military. It's a military government. That's why they enacted this disarmament law, is that they can have a military under the UN that will be the only army in the world. And of course the UN is run by communists, and they will have the only army. No country will have a national army, and they will have to allow the world army to come upon their territory, which is of course belonging to everybody in the world, regardless of what country you have. And it's military law. Now, some of the presidents that we've had, when I talked about different ones, you know, introduced what was on the agenda for them to introduce at the time period that they were in office. One of the presidents that is ballyhooed and given so much credit for being such a wonderful American was Ronald Reagan. I was the one that exposed him when he was our governor, and how he was working to regionalize us, and there were other things that he participated in. He was the first governor with the governor of Nevada to actually break part of a state line with a regional arrangement, and that was at Lake Tahoe. That was ruled to be an official standing in a court case that was charging that they were erasing national boundary lines and state boundary lines, and it was implied in the decision by the court that when they lay regional lines down, it automatically dissolves your state boundaries.
Of course, Bernadine, I was much more worried about the fact that Ronald Reagan told us he was against increasing taxes. He was in favor of small government. And yet when he was governor of the state of California, he gave us the biggest tax increase as far as property taxes of any governor that we've ever had. He said he wanted to limit the government. He massively expanded the government. He said he would never support a compulsory withholding tax, compulsory with state in holding tax, withholding tax, and because he wanted us to have to pay it, and it shouldn't be deducted from our salaries. And then, of course, he turned right around and did it. He said his feet were set in cement. And then, of course, when he turned around and lied and said, you know, I didn't mean it at all, he said that, and he made a joke out of it. He was the greatest actor we've ever had. He said, that sound you hear is the cement breaking around my feet. Ha, ha, ha. In other words, he said what we wanted to hear. When he became the President of the United States, he gave us the biggest deficits this nation has ever known. Jimmy Carter, it took us 200 years from 1789 to 1979 to come up with $1 trillion in debt. Why, Chris, Ronald Reagan gave us 1.7 increase in national debt simply in the 8 years he was in the White House. He criticized Jimmy Carter for being a spendthrift, having increased the national debt by $200 billion in 4 years. Ronald Reagan increased our debt $200 billion every year he was in office. Yet we believe he's a conservative.
Oh, and he did a lot of things. I have a long list, but I wanted to focus mostly on the things he did in relation to the military government. When he was our governor, he set up in Santa Barbara the California Specialized Training Institute, where they were training police officers on how to take over under military operation. Another thing he did when he became the president, they had a manual. It's called the Courts Martial Manual. And when you go under full military government, they already have an instruction manual how the courts are to operate. That was done under him.
Because I'm really much more concerned right now about the Military Commission Act, Bernadine, because even the liberal senator from Connecticut, Patrick Leahy, has said the legislation that George Bush signed just last year, the Military Commission Act and the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act, actually encouraged the president to establish martial law in America. And this is exactly what is intended by those two pieces of legislation. What Ronald Reagan did in the past was certainly significant, but right now, why we have passed legislation that does away with the Posse Comitatus Act, that does away with the, with the ability of even our state governors to control our National Guard. Now the President of the United States has signed legislation that allows him to use the Federal Army, the National Army, American Army, against American citizens. That has not existed for over 100 years. The Posse Comitatus Act protected us from our own military, and that has been removed in the name, of course, of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden.
Yeah. Well, another thing is I don't think that the public is aware that in a republic, you do not merge the military with a civilian law enforcement. If you do, you have changed your form of government. You're no longer a republic. You're in a dictatorship. And that's been done. So that was done simply by an executive order signed by George Bush, which is the method that all these presidents are using. Like when we got the 10 federal regions, Executive Order 11647 was signed by Nixon, just with one man writing an order and signing it. As you know, the imperial legislator is what they're making of them. And then it becomes law, just with one man making damaging a principle, a fundamental principle in the structure of your government. And this is being allowed by letting presidents write these executive orders. And that's how we got the Homeland Security. That was done by George W. Bush signing an executive order. And that merges the military and the civilian law enforcement together. It's in effect now. So for us to move into a military system, which we were told that it's on standby.
Hold that thought right now. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bernadine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Bernadine has suggested that we're moving towards a military dictatorship, that the executive orders are in place, that suddenly they want to bring martial law to America. Of course, in the name of protecting us from the wicked Osama bin Laden or from this terrible bird flu, or in fact, if you read John Warner Defense Appropriations Act, he talks about such the president can have martial law in America. If there is an epidemic, if there is a national disaster, or if there is civilian unrest for one cause or another, how many Americans know what's in the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act? Why isn't there an outcry from people across America? And I think that the reason there is because the media is controlled. But Bernadine is concerned we're moving towards a military dictatorship. And all we need is for any sort of a national emergency to occur. And the legislation is in place. And where is the outcry from our religious leaders? Where is the outcry from our conservative leaders? Why, they're all cheering for the Republican Party because they're going to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden. Go ahead, Bernadine.
Well, that's true. I mean, we have such a propaganda press, especially with as much time as Rush Limbaugh has, talking on programs in my locale, I imagine all over the nation. He is the person that clears up any, that anything that Bush does, it's obviously wrong. He finds a way of explaining that this is good and so forth. And we have it in Fresno. We have Ray Appleton that comes on, and you can't tell the truth on the program because all the calls are screened just as they are on Limbaugh's program. So the public is denied information that they really need to have to make proper decisions. On TV, you have John Kasich, you have Sean Hannity. John Kasich, K-A-S-I-C-H, he signed when he was in the House of Representatives, he signed the disarmament law, approved the one that was done, that I told you that George H.W., Herbert Walker Bush, introduced in 89. It was Public Law 101-216. I've done extensive checking on that, and the whole approval, or I should say practically the whole House of Representatives, with just a few exceptions, they all approved it, and it was so plain telling what they were doing, dismantling.
What was this legislation specifically, Bernadette?
Pardon me?
What was the legislation?
Public Law 101-216, it was the disarmament law.
All right.
And it came right out and said elimination of armed forces and armaments of all kinds. And the people's guns are classed as armaments because we are basically a militia. We were made to be a militia. It's in the Second Amendment. So their guns, classed as armaments, means that those things are going to be prohibited. You get that in more detail if you go into the program Freedom from War, and it's the United States program for peace and freedom.
Well, because Bernadette, that was passed under the Kennedy administration back in the early 1960s.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
It's been a cavalcade of misdeeds and the presidents are administrators of global government. They introduce new things. They carry on what their forebears bequeathed to them to carry on, whatever it is. And so the programs get massive and more expansive as each administration goes on. And more obvious. Now, we're in a position now where George Bush has to do things which are even more advanced than what formerly that Kennedy got by with. Kennedy signed the first one, Public Law 87-297, the first one to totally disarm the people of this nation and to give our military...
He signed it, but it didn't happen. They didn't able to do that. That is their ultimate goal.
What do you mean it didn't happen?
Well, I still have rifles. People across America have rifles, so you can't Bernadine, you can't say they don't have rifles, because they do have rifles. They want to take them away, there's no question.
Well, it's on the books, that's what I'm saying.
It's on the books.
They've got it
written on the agenda.
Please. It's passed as law.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bernadine Smith. Go ahead, Bernadine. It has not been implemented. The law has not been implemented. In other words, as long as the people still have it, if you tell them that they've already taken away the weapons, then no, it's not true. They want to take away the weapons. They may have but these laws are not constitutional, as you well know.
Well, they haven't taken them away because Americans are so trained to know that that's their basic responsibility to protect the Constitution by having firearms.
Right.
But they are taking it away on people that they can class as irresponsible. They are taking it away in different cases, but they haven't put the sweeping law, which is written and is sitting there, written by Rush Holt out of New Jersey. And when they pass that law, you have to declare whatever you own in firearms.
But, of course, the thing is that this is not the case today. There are no questions they want to take away the weapons from the people.
Yeah, but the legislation's there, Dr. Stan.
Yes, but I know, but they have not implemented the legislation.
Well, that doesn't take much to sign it.
Well, but you see, you can't tell the people that they've done this, because they haven't done it, but they have the potential to do it, they want to do it. There are people who do not believe that people should have the right to keep and bear arms. But, you know, and certainly, but piece by piece, they're trying to limit this, and they're trying to get legislation through that, let's imagine that you'd, at some time or other, you'd perhaps had a felony charge against you. Now, of course, they want to get legislation through so you can't purchase a weapon. So they're having to go at this very, very slowly because they know the American people still value the right to keep and bear arms. It's not that they don't want to. It's just that they haven't been able to accomplish it as yet.
But, Dr. Stan, they also know who has what because they've gone around and they've copied the forms that these gun dealers use at gun shows. Or different people that sell guns, they've copied, I think it's 4473s, or I think that's the form number. And they know who has what.
But you see, a lot of people had guns a long time ago that they don't have records on.
Well, that's
and of course,
what I'm
saying. Bernadine, what they're doing is violating the law. The law was that they were not to do that. These people are lawbreakers, so we have to bring that up.
But Dr. Stan, what I'm trying to say is, when they sign the law written by Rush Holt, if you
hold
do
that thought,
not declare...
Hold that thought, right there. Go right ahead, Bernadine.
Well, if you do not declare every gun that you possess that is unregistered and unlicensed, and they can make house-to-house searches, that's something we haven't gotten into yet, but that's planned. But when they make a house-to-house search, and they find you with a gun that you didn't have license and not registered, you are subject to be put in prison for 15 years. And
Bernadine, that law is not in effect now. Nobody has been required to report all of their weapons.
It hasn't been passed.
It has not been passed. So
no,
please do not
agenda.
Infer that it has been passed. I'm sure there are people that would like to get it passed, but it really hasn't been passed, has it?
Dr. Stan, you don't wait till it's passed.
No, you warn people that they would like to, but you do not tell them. You do not tell them. You do not tell the people that they, when they do the house-to-house searches, if you haven't declared your weapons, you're going to be put in jail for 15 years. You don't tell them that until the law is passed. There are people who would like to do that, but this is not yet the law of our land, is it?
You haven't got enough time after they've signed the law. You haven't got enough time to stop them. If it's the day they're going to sign, how are you going to get enough people awake and stand still long enough to explain what their jeopardy is?
Has the law been passed?
You have to warn them in advance.
Well,
what's laying out there?
You have to warn them, but you don't tell them the law's been passed. And you have to.
I didn't say the law was passed. I said the law is in committee. It's on standby, and when they do sign that into law, now how do you think they're going to back that? I'll tell you what else I see coming.
Well, wait a minute. When will it be out of committee? When will it go to the floor of the House?
Well, it's in committee. And when they want it to move, it will move.
All right, fine.
And the president gives... Well, it won't be the president. It'll be the people that pull the president's strings. So they'll tell somebody in the Congress and the president that they want that bill to move now. That's how the thing has been working. It's all Rockefeller-trained people that are... It's a cabal that's pulling the strings behind the scenes. And that's how these things come out at the time that they want them to come out. But they've done the preliminary work by drafting what they need. Now, here's another threat. They were planning way back to have foreign troops police in the United States, and the U.S. Military was to police outside in these foreign countries. We've already conformed to that. We've got men all over the globe that are policing other countries. It's called peacekeeping. These are the peacekeeping missions. Well, now what I'm seeing is Bush is complaining that he doesn't have enough men, that he wants to bring in foreigners to fill in our military. You can almost see where the instruction for him to move on that. Now, according to what I've read, he's already got a few thousand foreigners already in our military that are not citizens, and these are the kind of people that will police our nation when we're under the global militarized world, New World Order.
But Bernadine, these are not these are not foreign troops. They're troops under American command. I share your concern about going out and recruiting non-citizens and people from other countries in our military, but that is not foreign troops. Foreign troops are troops that are under foreign command, and you're absolutely right. There is a plan for doing this. It dates back to 1950. And I am concerned that the time may come when that will happen. And I would warn people, but that's different than having foreigners join our army. You're talking, when you talk about foreign troops, you're talking about, in fact, the plan was to have Chinese troops actually policing the United States, but they would be Chinese troops under Chinese command, just as the American forces throughout the world in 130 nations are under American command.
Well, when full control is given to the United Nations, and it probably has been, but it's not in effect because of the legislation that Clinton signed, 26 is all I can think of right now on that, but nobody actually saw it. Even the people in Congress say they didn't get to read the whole thing. But it's suspected that we have already assigned it over to the UN.
Now, what legislation are you speaking of?
I'd have to go look it up. I forget the full title of it, but everybody was up in arms when Clinton was in office because even the congressmen said they hadn't seen it. It was something that Clinton did, and it was told that he had signed away our military.
Well, but
now, whether that is, it isn't, you know, this. We're not dealing with little insignificant things. These are grave issues. These are big, dangerous moves and stratagems that they're pulling on us.
Well, no question at all, but is there legislation, do you have copies of this legislation, this law that you say that he signed, do we have copies, are they available?
Yeah, but everything's so vague that you can't tell what it actually covers.
I see, okay.
And even the congressmen admit that they don't actually know, but it's suspected that that's when he signed us completely over. Now, just because he signed us over, that doesn't mean that we're going to change uniforms, but our guys are out there working under, a lot of them are working, have worked under the UN with UN berets and UN insignias, but what I'm trying to say is when it's open, out in the open, that the military is under the dominance of those who run the Security Council at the UN. They can do anything they choose. They can assign any foreign troops, period, in the plural, they can assign them to go anywhere that they choose. Wait a minute, but
they cannot tell them to come in the United States if the United States refuses to let them in.
You're not going to refuse when your own government goes along with the plan.
I see, but do you know that the government has already gone along with the plan and said the United Nations can bring troops in here anytime it wants to? I mean, if you have the legislation, I would just love to see that.
Well, I'll have to get that for you. I have it. It doesn't say it in black and white, because a lot of the stuff they write is so vague, and you can't tell exactly what they're leading into, but that was what it was a claim to be at the time, that was a big issue in this country. So what I'm saying is it's no secret, Public Law 87-297 says we're going to eliminate our national armed forces and turn it over to the international organization, meaning the UN. That's no secret. You can look that up at any time in any library that houses that. I can give a citation for it on the Internet. There's books, there's laws printed. There's no secret. And if the power to do that has already been written into law, the fact that they didn't do it doesn't mean that they're not going to do it. When they write and say they're going to do it, you better believe it. And when the United Nations has that power, and no country has its own military or authority over its own military, then the decisions are made at that international level. What I'm trying to say, Dr. Stan, is if we don't keep an eye on the agenda, the international agenda, it is going to crowd constitutional law off the face of the earth. You may think you have the best protection, the best government, and we have. I don't doubt that. We have a marvelous what has been bequeathed to us by the founding fathers as they intended it to operate. It is the best government ever written. There's no question. But you can't stand on that when you have devious people planning something superior, which they consider superior. It's not supposed to be. I mean, we're supposed to be independent. We have a Declaration of Independence. But are we independent? We are interdependent. They have made us interdependent. And you have to watch what's happening with this international law, what's going on. Now, like I said, with the Homeland Security, the mechanism is already erected for them to operate this country under military government. The Homeland Security has every policeman in this nation online under its directive. That's how expansive that thing has become. And that's something that you have to realize, that it isn't a healthy form of government if you're intending to be a republic. They're building, the global government is being built right under your eyes, and people are not able to see it because, like I said, we have this propaganda press that tells you what they did means this rather than what it really means. They're just keeping the wool pulled over your eyes. You have to put all this stuff together. Now Bush can even open up your mail. You've probably heard that one.
Yes, I think, of course, they are listening to our conversation we have. Certainly, if you have a cell phone, if you even are in a room with a telephone, they can listen to your conversation without your knowledge. Why would they do that? Because they're collecting dossiers on every single citizen. Certainly, they can listen to all of our telephone calls, our emails and faxes. They do this by computer, and they've been doing this for probably 25 years under Project Echelon. There is nothing new. This has nothing to do with terrorism. It has to do with monitoring every citizen. And when they say, oh, we're here to protect you from the wicked Osama bin Laden, well, then what were they doing? Why were they doing this back in the 1980s? For the listener out there who does not believe that they've been reading your mail, they've been reading your emails and your faxes and listening to your telephone calls for at least 20 years, go up on the Internet and Google in Echelon, Project Echelon. They've been listening not only to our telephone calls and reading our emails and faxes, they've been doing it for everybody in the world. And the people of Europe are furious about it. The fact that the American people don't know, that the elite have no respect at all for the law. They have their own set of laws, because they are certainly in a different category, and the laws are simply for you and I. But when the government violates its laws and is collecting dossiers on every citizen, I think everybody should be concerned. And I share Bernie Benedict's concern. It is only a matter of time before we live in a dictatorship, and they begin to fill up all these new concentration camps that they're building, the $385 million they gave to Halliburton to build detention camps. They're going to fill up the Japanese concentration camps. They're just refurbishing the tent camps that they had. They built back in 1941 and 42 for the Japanese, and they're refurbishing them because they want us to know how terrible it was that we would put American citizens in concentration camps. And then they're turning around and giving Halliburton $385 million to build new concentration camps. What's wrong with this scenario? If we were concerned about putting the Japanese in concentration camps, why are we building new ones? We have actually some videos on America Behind Barbed Wire. We have the amazing clips. Everybody should get our concentration camp special and let everybody in America know there really is a plan for a military dictatorship in America. And we have a new four-tape set. It's called the Military Commission Act that goes into the Military Commission, the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act that just became law this year. Ladies and gentlemen, freedom is not free, and if you're not involved, you're part of the problem. Go ahead, Bernadine.
Well, what I'm saying is you can't wait until they've put everything into effect, and when the gates are slammed shut on you, you can't then try to get out. It's too late. You have to be on your toes and prevent some of the stuff in your own country. What's going on here? We need our boys back here. We've got an invasion of illegals coming in here. We don't know what they're going to pull off. We know that there's the Mexicans that have that Aztlan, Mecha, and all that, where they want to take some of the states back for Mexico. Some of those are trained soldiers that are coming in and acting as just ordinary illegals. And we've got people from the Far East. We don't know what they'll try to pull off. We need to strengthen this country and forget about what's going on in countries where it's not our business. I noticed in Bush's speech, when he gave it yesterday, he talked about how we have to continue to put democracies in these countries in the Far East, and I think he doesn't mean just to stay with Iraq. He wants to do Syria. He wants to do Iran. He wants to do all those countries with this democracy. And what people don't know is democracy isn't the same meaning that people attribute to it. Democracy in their book is communism. If you get into reading the book called On the Agenda of Democracy, you see you're reading communism. Now, this was taught, the plans that we're talking about today were taught and were worked out before we signed the UN Charter. A lot of this was done under FDR. And in the League of Nations days, they merged with what the two groups were doing. And a year after the UN started, all the League of Nations Day information and records were turned over to the UN. But all those groups that want a global government, which is a pipe dream, really, with so many different types of people in the world and geography as it is, but the size of it is makes it impossible to function honestly. And in the first place, with one government over you, what are you going to do when that goes corrupt, which is inevitable? It is inevitable that it will become corrupt.
Bernadine, let's get out your telephone number for people who'd like to get in touch with you.
Well, I would rather that they go into my website.
All right, hold that, then let's tell them where the website is. Could you give them the website?
Sure. Thanks for asking. It's 3Ws, Liberty, Gun, Rights, .com, www.libertygunrights, R-I-G-H-T-S, .com. I just put up, the last day or two, I put up the world troop map that was designed in 1952. See, it's just like you said. They've been planning this for many years. They've set these dates. 1976 was going to be one. 1983 was one. 1984 was one. Year 2000 was one. Now it's 2010 as the goal for where they're going to be finished and go into full-blown globalism, military government over the world one. But they find out that the resistance that they have to contend with, the countries that don't want this, they have to go to war.
Well,
and that sets them back.
What's so interesting about this map that Bernadine is talking about is they were telling where in the future the various troops were to be stationed. Where were the American troops to be stationed? Why, in the Middle East. Where were the, who was to be governing the western part of the United States? The Chinese Communists. Isn't it interesting that they knew 50 years ago that our troops would be centered in the Middle East? You found that sort of interesting, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, the world troop map shows where some of our troops were designed to go. I think that they have made revisions to the map that was done then. However, we put that up on our web. If they go into my website, they can look into the documents section, go into what is called hot news. There's a picture of the planning of the types of troops. We would have Irish troops on the West Coast, and we'd have Venezuelan and Colombian on the East Coast. We'd have Russians in the lower part of the United States, you know, like Georgia, Texas, from one end to the other there. Above, you'd have Belgium troops. Now, that was just one concept. I'm not saying that that concept is in effect today. It's just like the regions. They had many different cut-ups of the country here in regions until they settled with the final 10 federal regions that was done under Nixon.
Bernadine, we're out of time, but thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bernadine's been around for a long time trying to warn people that they want to take away our freedom, and they really do. They really do want to disarm the American people. Now, fortunately, they didn't get much legislation through during the last 6 years, but I fear that they will move, and move very rapidly. And do not anticipate that the president is going to protect you, because he has signed legislation that allows for a military dictatorship in America for martial law. You must get our Military Commission Act 4-tape set. You must have this legislation. We actually offer the Military Commission Act, which I think is must reading for anybody who wants to understand what's going on today. There really are people who have a different worldview. because they worship a different god. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. Certainly you need to get the other material available from Radio Liberty. If you want to know where the Council on Foreign Relations came from, you need to read Professor Quigley's 1,342-page book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Where did the Council on Foreign Relations come from? It is a front group for a secret society that was created by Cecil Rhodes in 1891. And what was its purpose? To bring about a world government. You cannot espouse globalism and be a good American. Globalism means you do away with the sovereignty of America. And when you realize, of course, that members of the Council on Foreign Relations espouse globalism, and they are in every key position in government today, whether it be Condoleezza Rice or Dick Cheney or Richard Armitage or certainly the people who are our ambassadors, the people in our State Department, or the people at every level of government, come from the Council on Foreign Relations. They're dedicated to one world government and the destruction of our national sovereignty. The fact that this is never discussed in the media simply reflects the fact that the media is controlled. If you'd like to know who controls the media and how it's done, a book by Professor Ben Bekdakian called The New Media Monopoly. If you want to understand the spiritual forces behind what's going on, you need to get my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. You need to get the information on satanic crimes. A good new book we're carrying goes into the background of the Skull and Bones, to which the president and his opponent in the 2004 election, Senator John Kerry, both of them were among the 800 living members of the Skull and Bones Society. They were both running for the presidency, and during the debates, neither one of them mentioned globalism. This idea of free trade, the idea of giving up our sovereignty, forming the North American Union, the destruction of America as we know it. That was never discussed. Why? Because they don't want you to know what's going on. Get the information available from Radio Liberty. We have some great new four tape sets on globalism, on the move towards the North American Union. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Let me mention again that Congressman Ron Paul is putting together a committee to consider running for the president in 2008. I believe that if you want to see a change, you want somebody who's not under the control of the truly satanic forces that control both political parties. Why you should very seriously consider opportunity to back a man who I believe is a great American, Congressman Ron Paul. So that he's going to need your support. You're going to have to write him, fax him, telephone him. You're going to have to start setting up communities. You're going to have to raise money. You're going to have to be involved. We can get a grassroots movement going if you really care about your freedom. Let me point out that Radio Liberty is heard on 60 stations across America. Quite frankly, we are 60 outlets across America every week. We need your help. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Remember, our shortwave frequencies change next Monday. Afternoon's program will be 9.480. That's 9.480. Our evening program, 5.755. That's 5.755. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization.